This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Roll Pod, Alabama sports podcast from Bama 247. I am staff writer Cody Goodwin. I am glad you guys are here. I'm with my teammates Alex Scarborough and Mike Rodak. We were supposed to have a show, guys, late last week, or at least we semi-promised a show late last week to kind of recap some of this portal movement that we all anticipated maybe happening, that a lot of people, I think, anticipated maybe happening. And there's been some transfer portal movement here in this spring window. We're about midway through it now as the time that we're recording this on Monday, April 22nd. It's going to be open for another week, but not a ton, or at least maybe not as much as some national prognosticators thought that we would see. And in the case of Alabama specifically, the positions maybe of need, or the specific, types of players that they were looking for on the football side, at least. Those markets haven't really materialized. And so that's what we're going to talk about on today's show. Why do we think that is? Let's just jump right into it right off the top. Alex, what's maybe a theory that you have about why it's been a little bit quieter this go around in the transfer portal?
Well, it's the timing, right? Like, everybody thought something would change. This is the way the spring portal normally works. Everybody who was worth much of anything, by and large, made the decision to leave after last season, and it's already done that. So I mean, that's why I went into it, just kind of shrugging my shoulders, but maybe somebody interesting will bubble up. But those big name guys are not really out there in large numbers. And if you're a team like Alabama that's recruited the way they have over the last number of years, not a lot of guys out there that you look and say is not better than my third or fourth string, fill in the blank. So I think that's a big part of it. Now, it should be said that there's still a little bit of time left. And as long as you're in the portal by, 11:59 on the 30th, you still got a chance to do something. But so far, it just hasn't materialized. And honestly, I didn't expect it to be a free-for-all. Now, did I expect it to be this quiet? I don't know. But not the numbers there, and just looked kind of like a typical spring portal window.
Yeah, a little slower pace, I suppose, and I'm sure there's a few reasons for that. Mike, any thoughts as to maybe why this portal window has been a little bit closed? And I should preface that, like, it's maybe a little bit slower just because of, we're viewing it through the Alabama lens, and there were some specific players or types of players that we know Alabama was looking for, but just really by and large, like, there's, I know Jaden Rashada, Arizona State quarterback, is in the portal now, and a few other high profile players out of, Tempe are headed to the portal. Dominic Williams from TCU, the big interior defensive lineman. I know that that piqued some interest when he hit the portal last week. But by and large, like, really not a ton of splash in the same way that maybe the December portal had. Mike, do you have a quick theory or maybe some thoughts on why that might be?
Yeah, I mean, a few theories to start. I mean, it's the first thing people forget is the SEC intra-conference transfer rule is still in place. So you're at this point in Texas and Oklahoma count now as part of that rule. So you're eliminating 15 possible teams and 15 of the better teams in college football from your pool of potential players. Because if you're at Georgia or Texas or LSU or whatever, you can't transfer to Alabama. You can't transfer to Auburn. You can't transfer to another SEC school after February 1st. So you can do it during the winter window, but you can't do it right now. So you're eliminating that pool of players, even if there might be a good backup tackle at one of those schools that maybe could start at Alabama or whatever it is. That, you know, is a major consideration. And if you're picking players from lower levels, FCS or group of five teams, a lot of those guys are already gone. You know, they've already made a decision, as Alex said, to leave after last season. I don't know what they would have gained by staying through the spring. So right now you're just looking at players that maybe had a hope or an optimism that they were going to get a starting role for a better school in the spring, and they realized that it wasn't going to happen. So that's part of it. And you know, that's a small pool of players. The other part of it is people forget Alabama already has basically at 85 right now. I think Nicholson gets into 86. I mean, it depends on some of the math and if Connor Talty leaves. I mean, we don't expect Tony Mitchell to be here in the fall. There could be a couple players that leave, but there was never going to be a ton of open spots for Alabama to fill. So it was always going to be two or three players maybe that they add, and that could still happen. And so that really leads me to the last theory I had, which is, you know, deadlines spur action. And we still have another 8 days, you know, of the portal here. And the way it works these days is that it's not always a player goes into the portal and that's the first time he's heard from all these schools and he doesn't know what's out there. Like, a lot of these guys already know what's out there in the marketplace before they even go to the portal, and going into the portal is kind of a formality. So again, you can call it tampering, you can call it whatever, but players don't often make that jump because you're kind of crossing the Rubicon and you might not be able to go back to your old school quite as easily if you publicly go into the portal. And so there could be some behind the scenes negotiation that takes place, and you're talking to your current school and seeing what they're offering, and you're talking to other schools and seeing what they're offering, and you kind of have to get to that deadline and everybody puts their best offers on the table. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's some of that happening as well. And so, you know, we'll have to see how many spots open for Alabama, because right now they have not lost a single player through the portal this spring. And B, are there any players out there that, again, are not in the portal yet or will go into the portal that are good enough to be on this team? And I don't know if there's going to be players that are going to be good enough to start at offensive tackle or corner. But as Alex said, you know, they need some bodies there. That's just a simple fact that they don't have enough bodies to get through potential injury situation or fill their special teams units or whatever it is. So there could be, it's like NFL free agency. You kind of get your first wave of players and everybody pounces on those, and then players kind of wait and see what's out there. And the teams say, let me look at priority A, B, and C first. And if you're priority D and we get down to you, then we'll sign you. And that could be something that happens where you get into early May. You have a player that thought he was going to have all these offers out there that never materialized. You had a team that thought there was going to be players they were going to get that never materialized. And then you kind of get a marriage of opportunity. And you know, maybe sign a guy that is a little bit lower level, is a backup player, is cheaper. But that you kind of go through the stages of free agency, as Lane Kiffin always says it is. And we could eventually get there. It just might take a couple weeks.
Yeah. Just to put a finer point on the SEC to SEC thing is a big deal. And to illustrate that, I remember talking to somebody on staff at Alabama, the first portal window, and talking about how difficult it was to convince guys to stay through the spring because they wanted, if they were going to leave, they wanted to leave for an SEC school. And they knew they could not do it if they did it in the spring. So seeing that, it helped to explain the mass exodus. And I think it also helps to explain why there's not as much movement right now.
That makes a lot of sense.
I wouldn't be shocked if that's challenged somehow in court one day. I mean, a lot of these artificial barriers that are placed on players' freedom, I think, have been challenged in court. Now, that's one where you could say, like, you agreed to play for an SEC school, you agreed to sign up for those rules. But I wouldn't be surprised if at some point a skilled lawyer, you know, who representing a player tries to shoot down that rule, because it, like you said, it does potentially limit players' opportunities at this time of year.
I don't even think you got to wait until a courtroom. I think it might be destined when the coach realizes he can't get a guy he wants, and suddenly that rule is working against the SEC. It's helped to quiet things down. So I think coaches, by and large, are going to be appreciative of it. But when they see top talent leave because they cannot remain in the SEC, I wonder how much that pushes the rule by the wayside, because there's a reason it's only the SEC primarily doing
it. And I remember covering the SEC spring meetings, I think it was 2 years ago, and I feel like that was proposed or at least talked about. I don't know if it was formally proposed to change that. And I remember a lot of coaches were, especially for the non-power schools in the SEC, were very leery of that, because they basically said, we're not going to put our spring games on TV. We're not going to put this film out there for our players if we feel like we're playing this guy in a spring game. It's on ESPN Plus or whatever. And then the other school is just watching that guy saying, we want him. And then, in, you know, the end of April, they have him. Yeah. So there's a lot of coaches that were not too happy about that rule. And it did not, again, I don't remember if it was proposed formally or whatever it was, but that did not fly a couple years ago.
All good points. All good points. To kind of a quick rewind, right? The portal's been open since April 16th. In the case of Alabama specifically, I know that they were looking for an experienced offensive tackle and another experienced defensive back, hopefully cornerback if they could find it. They did pick up Caden Proctor, who officially confirmed plans that he is going to transfer back to Alabama. I know that we were all kind of like, yes, but still awaiting official confirmation because he just doesn't really talk publicly anymore. Not so much at cornerback, at least yet. There's some intriguing prospects that we can talk about here in just a second. But I think the other intriguing pickup that Alabama got was, Graham Nicholson, the kicker from, I forget where he's from, Miami of Ohio. He's a Lou Groves Award winner. And so, you know, they're trading, Alabama's basically trading Will Reichard, all-time NCAA scoring leader, with the guy that beat him out for the National Kicker of the Year award effectively. So nice little pickup there. Maybe says a little bit about how the staff feels about the current kicking situation. I know that was kind of a sneaky little subplot that we were paying attention to this summer. And, when the walk-ons are beating out the guy who's on scholarship at the spring game, we can discuss whether or not that's totally fair, because Talty kicked a 47-yard field goal and missed, while the other guys only kicked, I think all their field goals were inside 30. Still says, I think, a little bit about how the staff felt. Also, whenever you can upgrade a position, generally speaking, most coaches are going to go for it. So there, still, I think, in the market for a veteran defensive back. How do we feel so far, Alex? I'll throw it back to you about the way Alabama has, one, approached this current portal cycle, and two, maybe what some of the moves or maybe lack of moves have said about what the staff feels about the current roster.
Yeah, I think if you take a step back and you told Alabama fans you could get the number one rated transfer, period, and the number one kicker, period, and that's the start to your transfer class, I think they'd be happy. Now, it's weird, right, because it's Caden Proctor, who you had like 4 months ago, and now you've got him back. So it feels like not quite as big of an addition. The kicker situation is really interesting to me. I wonder what it says about not just Connor Talty in the kicking room, but also about how they see the offense functioning. This has been at Washington, a offense that was not afraid to go for it on fourth down. Are they thinking maybe, with the talent we have here, we can be a little bit more conservative and kick the football more? It's maybe a reach to say at this point, but it was one of the things that crossed my mind. It's been lackluster overall, though, in terms of the numbers. I think people were expecting a little bit more aggressiveness from Alabama in the portal. I like the fact that they're not reaching for guys and just picking up whoever. Now they're going to need numbers, as Mike brought up, just to simply practice the way they want to. But until a guy bubbles up and goes in the portal that we haven't seen, who they think, again, is better than their third or fourth string guy, I don't see them reaching at this point, and the numbers aren't there. So it's a decent start. It's just not the big free agent class that you were expecting. And I know nobody, I don't know if anybody on this pod was expecting 4 months ago there'd be a kicker, but if you're going to get a kicker, get the best one in the country, I guess.
Yeah, no, 100% there. I think Alabama could still, they're probably still monitoring for another experienced offensive tackle. They're obviously still monitoring for an experienced defensive back. I think the other thing too, just and you guys both mentioned this, just the date, the calendar, right? Like, there's still another 8 days that players can go into the portal for various reasons. They're probably waiting just to kind of see, what the options are. The inability to transfer from one SEC school to another, I think, is really interesting. And the, you know, once they get in, I think the other interesting part, at least to me, about the calendar part of this is that, you know, if they are in the portal by the 30th, right, by the last possible second that they can get there, they then have all summer, right, to basically figure out where they want to go. They don't have to figure that out until the fall. Whereas like in December, the portal is kind of a mad dash because all the players, you know, your semester's over, your season's over. You kind of have to figure out where you're going to go very quickly because the next semester starts in January, right? Like you can kind of sit in the portal and maybe stay at the school you want to, but, you know, then you're kind of in that weird, awkward limbo position where you're at your old school and you want to leave and, you know, this, that, and the next. Whereas like, you know, right now these players have maybe a little bit more time to figure out where they want to go. So, you know, as we always do when we talk portal on the podcast, it's like, hey, like there's a fair chance that things could change by the time you listen to this. So, even if we are recording this on a Monday, so that's, I think that's one thing that we'll probably pay attention to in terms of prospects that are currently in the portal. So far as we know, at either offensive tackle and maybe a little bit more cornerback, Mike, I'll throw it back to you. Who are the interesting players that maybe fit the bill of what not only Alabama is looking for, but, you know, maybe guys that they just need to maybe take a chance on a little bit just because of the need at the specific positions.
Well, you know, I don't know if they necessarily need to take a chance on like a bigger name. Like I know people get enamored with Cormani McClain. He's already turned down Alabama once as a high school recruit. He's obviously, you know, there's been documented issues with him at Colorado. Like it's not something that it doesn't seem like Alabama's interested in. And to be honest, I think Kalen Bohr even alluded to that when he was doing, you know, the Next Round podcast last week, you know, from the Rise Golf Tournament, and essentially said, we don't want to bring someone in who's not a culture fit. If we bring someone in and that causes us to lose two or three other guys, it's kind of how he phrased it, then it doesn't make sense. And kind of reading between the lines, I thought that was a little bit of a, not a shot at Cormani McClain, but I think a reference at least, kind of being the biggest name in the portal. So, you know, in terms of corners, there's not a lot. Greedy Vance was one that seemed to be on Alabama's radar from Florida State. He's already committed to USC last night. You know, I would assume Alex might bring up the Arizona corner, Takario Davis, who's really the only other one uncommitted right now among Alabama or among 24/7's kind of top 50 or so. Is kind of scrolling through the list. So in terms of like the biggest guys, there's not very many who have gone in this spring portal window at corner. But again, I think you get into the lower levels, you might say to a guy, just sit tight. And if it materializes in a couple of weeks, then we'll bring you in if you don't get a better offer. So it could be someone that we're not quite thinking of that's from a smaller school that they look at or they might know. You know, again, Kane Womack and Mo Linguist have both come from group of five schools. There might be some players that they know there that could help them and might know the system. So keep an eye on that. But, you know, I think we look at tackle as one area offensively that I think we've talked about. I think Caden Proctor fills a decent amount of that need. I think if you feel good about Elijah Pritchett having a decent chance to be decent at right tackle, shall we say, then to be honest, I think the bigger need is like backup guard. Because right now, in theoretically, Parker Brailsford could play backup guard if he doesn't win the center job. DeBoer's mentioned he started a guard early last year for Washington. He seems a little bit undersized to me in the SEC for that spot. But right now, if you have an injury to Booker or Jaden Roberts, you're playing Olas Alanin or you're playing Rock Montgomery. Neither one is really experienced. They both played very little as freshmen last year. So to have that guy like they did last year, two of them really, they had Darian Dalcourt and they had Terrence Ferguson. Both of those guys are gone now. So that experienced kind of backup guard, I feel like could be a spot. Again, it depends on how comfortable they would feel with Brailsford playing guard. But I think right now it's sort of looking at more of these backup spots. It's depth roles. It's not starting roles right now.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that on that Next Round interview last week that DeBoer on his own brought up the fact that Brailsford started out at guard before switching to center. Mm-hmm. And I know we're spending a lot of time on offensive line and defensive back, and those are by far the biggest positions of need. Don't forget receivers, still one of those that if the right guy comes along, I think they could make a run at him. Keandre Lambert-Smith, it seemed like there was some initial interest from Alabama and reciprocated. That's kind of cooled off a little bit. But the fact that he is not committed yet, is interesting to me, and that's one position overall that I could see a player or two entering the portal late and there being somebody there worth going after. I know the way the room is right now, they're not unhappy with. I know you'd like to have a go-to guy. I know Kalen Vohr's talked about kind of identifying that guy. Jeremy Bernard has that look. But I think they like the versatility and options of that group. I just think if the right guy comes along, whether that's a Lambert Smith or a guy we're not talking about yet, I could still see them going that route.
And who's the Alabama, or the Arizona State transfer that
Arizona? It's Takario Davis, I believe. He's one
wide receiver. The wide receiver from Arizona State.
Oh yeah,
Elijah Badger.
Yes, Elijah.
Yeah. Badger. Where you know, Sun Devil source that you know we're affiliated with at 247 said Alabama. Alabama, Texas A&M are among the powerhouse programs that privately inquired about Badger. Two-time All Pac-12 honorable mention, 135 receptions, 1,500 receiving yards in the last two seasons. So that's one name to keep in mind there. And I will say, just to go back quickly to the offensive line thing, I've kind of forgotten. I'm pretty sure I saw during the spring game that Nikhil Bertrand, you know, the tackle they picked up from Texas A&M, was playing a little bit of guard. He's 6'6", 340, so he's got like 50 pounds on Parker Brailsford, probably about 6 inches too. So that could be an option at backup guard because he doesn't seem like he's really in the mix to start at tackle. So that could alleviate if he can play guard, then some of the need. I don't think offensive line is as big of a need as it was before the Caden Proctor coming back news came out.
Yeah, the ripple effect of Caden was the most important thing. Is you can settle the left spot. And then it gives you more. You suddenly go from having options at right to having three options, and you can feel a lot better, whether that's Pritchett or whoever it is. Mm-hmm. No, that again, that's why when you step back and you say you got the number one rated player overall in Caden Proctor and the number one kicker, it's not a bad place to be, honestly.
Yeah, and when you combine that with the fact that, you know, again, there's still a lot of talent on Alabama's roster. And there haven't been any defections yet, right? Knock on wood, there's still another week. If I'm the staff, I probably feel good about where the roster is at going into the summer, at least. And speaking of the lack of defections, Alex, I wanted to kind of pick your brain a little bit about this. You wrote a story last week. Ty Simpson is not transferring. And this, we've had this quarterback discussion, I feel like, throughout the spring, and we're probably going to have it again throughout the summer months after what we saw Ty do with the spring game and just the way that the staff kind of feels and has talked about him. This is big, right? Because we monitored the quarterback room just to, one, is there a battle here? And two, what would that mean for this specific portal window? And again, still a week left. There still could be a lot of movement. But Ty intending to stay and see this out, does that tell us anything that we maybe don't already know? Should there be some elevated confidence in the fact that maybe there truly is a quarterback battle here? What would you kind of take away from that piece of news?
I didn't get the sense necessarily from reporting this that it means Ty is going to beat out Jalen Milroe. I think it was more a situation of understanding that this is the place I need to be. This is the place I've committed to. I like this coaching staff a lot. You know, talking to his dad, I think there's a feeling that not that he wouldn't have fit with Tommy Reese's system. Ty really liked Tommy, but that the way this offense functions, the reads they ask, the drop back passing, all those things really fits with Ty. And that's what we saw, right? We saw a quarterback, he made some really nice throws. Don't get me wrong. But what stood out to me was he just looked like a confident player. And like that speaks to where he's at in terms of the offense. So I think this puts Alabama in the conversation for having one of the best quarterback rooms in the country, because again, we've talked about it on the pod before. The style of play for Jalen Milroe makes it very clear that you need a backup quarterback, because even if he just rolls his ankle one time and is out one series, that's pivotal series. And you have a guy you're not confident in, that throws everything out of whack. If you have Ty, now you're looking at it and saying, okay, I don't feel like all of my offensive playbook is gone. And that's the thing. This staff, in what they've said publicly and what they've said privately, they know how fortunate they are to have him there, not just in terms of what it means for next year, but what it means for this year in particular. The number two quarterback position is as important as anything, especially in the way today's portal age works. So you keep Ty in the building. It lets everything else fall into place. And oh, by the way, I mean, we're still waiting. I think we all expected maybe one quarterback to move. It still hasn't happened yet. So if you hold on to Lonergan and Austin Mack, that's four deep, and you feel really good about where you are. Again, though, you've got, what, 8 days left. We'll see how that materializes.
100%.
And, yeah, I'll just say on that, too, they could very well keep all four.
Yeah.
Obviously, to get all four to play this year, you know, you might get a few snaps for Lonergan and Mack at the end of, like, the Western Kentucky game. You know, sorry, Michael Casagrande, but it's probably going to be a 40-point blowout. You know, and what a USF. Hey, USF at home. I forgot about that. You got USF coming in after last year's game, so I don't know if I'll call that a blowout quite yet. But there, you know, there's probably some playing time for those third or fourth guys this year. But I don't know if the situation is going to change that much for Dylan Lonergan or Austin Mack between now and December 4th, 5th, whenever the portal reopens for them. And then at that point, it's a question of what Jalen Milroe does in December, where he's at. Is he still the starter? Which I think, you know, there's a very good chance that's still true. But is he ready to go in the NFL? Is he considered an early round draft pick? Is he considered a late round draft pick? Where is he at? Because he would still have another year of eligibility, I think, is going to go a long way to determine what Ty Simpson does, what Lonergan does, and what Mack does. Because if Jalen Milroe is coming back for 2025, it's going to be hard for them to keep all four of those guys another year or even into the spring of next year. Like, so the situation, I think, can be maintained for right now, but it just doesn't seem tenable in the longer term to have all four of those guys just kind of hanging around. Like, Ty Simpson is still kind of playing the long game on this. I'm sure there's a thought, at least in the back of his mind, that he could at some point win the starting job for Alabama. Whether it's in August or whether it's in some point during the season, I think the odds are still against him being like the starter on day one. But is he the starter in game 10? Who knows? I'm sure he's playing the long game. And even if, you know, he doesn't start this year, I'm sure he's thinking, all right, I can put myself in position to start in 2025. But it all kind of depends on Jalen Milroe. So I just don't know if they're going to keep all four of these guys next year. But here we are. And we're still talking about Lonergan just kind of being a third quarterback and not playing too many snaps this year.
Well, Nick Saban's gone, so we can engage in hypotheticals now.
Right.
The possibilities of seem very slim of me to me of Jalen Milroe returning. I think there are two distinct possibilities. One, he plays really well and enters the NFL draft because then he's had two really good back-to-back seasons of playing well. What more do you have to gain? Or he's beaten out and then he doesn't have a home. I don't see a real path forward for another year of Jalen Milroe. And I know we're putting the cart before the horse in a major way there, but it does signal that, look, if you're Austin Mack or Dylan Lonergan, you saw what Ty Simpson did, but you're also saying it's a guy who's never started a game before. And if I want to go in a quarterback competition with him, I feel a lot better about it than I did with Jalen Milroe. And then suddenly a three quarterback room next year doesn't look so daunting. But again, way too early. But I don't see, like, in terms of the possibilities of Jalen Milroe, I don't think that third option of coming back for one more year seems very likely at this point.
I agree. Yeah. Barring an injury. That he's coming back for, it'll be a fifth year at that point for him. Mm-hmm. I agree. Like, that, it would have to be a very kind of down to middle year, like kind of last year was. Like, it wasn't overwhelmingly great. Otherwise, he would have been in a draft right now. But it wasn't. You know, you're still second team all SEC, I'm pretty sure, Milroe, right? Yeah. Or was that – it was Daniels and then Beck. So he's third team all SEC, let's call him. He was the third guy, I would say. But that's the thing you have to think about. If you're Mack or you're Ty or you're Lonergan, like, you have to be thinking those steps down the road because that affects your own future and your own decision-making. And right now – if you don't go into the portal in the next 8 days, you're not going to the portal until December. So that's a big gap. It's hypotheticals, but I agree. Like, you have to be thinking, what's the next step for me? What's going to happen next to quarterback for Alabama? And I agree that the two most likely possibilities are Milroe's in the draft next year or Milroe's in the portal and going somewhere else for 2025 to play a fifth year.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
That is that's not a cup of coffee that Alex has this morning. That is a crystal ball to give a nod to one of Nick Saban's better gaffes over the last year.
Sorry,
that's a lot of football talk. I wanted to wrap up today's show with a little bit of basketball talk because there was a lot of portal movement and has been a lot of portal movement and could still be a little bit more portal movement for the Alabama men's basketball team. A quick rundown. Mike, you can check me on this, but I think I have it all written down. Alabama has lost to the portal. Rylan Griffin, Chris Parker, Nick Pringle, Sam Walters, Davin Cosby. Mark Sears has also declared for the NBA draft process, but he has maintained the right to keep his eligibility for one more year if he wants to return. Alabama has also gained Houston Millette from Pepperdine, Chris Youngblood from USF, Aiden Holloway from Auburn. Put a pin in that. We're going to talk about that one here in just a second. And that's in addition to Nas Cunningham, Darian Reed, and Aiden Sherrill, you know, all three top tier recruits that have signed and will join the program next year. They're also in the mix, so far as I know, for Tennessee's Jonas Adu and Rutgers' Clifford Amori, two big men that I think could shore up a lot defensively for Alabama if they're able to add them to the program. I've also been in contact with many others, some who have already made their decisions, others who I think are still going through the portal process. Mike, early thoughts about the movement with the basketball program and some of these portal moves.
Well, yeah, I mean, you named six players there, the five in the portal plus Sears. I if you ask me to handicap it, I still think there's a better chance that Sears. Well, that's a tough one. Like, I still think he could come back, but you start thinking about it and he's not getting any taller. He's 5'11 and three quarters is what he measured at the combine last year without shoes. Coming back for another year is not going to make him any taller, but that's
more still, money.
Yeah, I would say there's a legitimate chance that he does look at the monetary aspect of it versus playing in the G League or on a two-way contract next year or playing internationally if he doesn't even make that. So, yeah, there's a legitimate chance that he comes back out of those six. The other five, obviously, I think are gone. But there's still a couple others that could leave. Like Grant Nelson's the big one that we're waiting for word on him, and there's really two options. Like, go into the draft again or transfer. Like, he was certainly open to that possibility when he talked to the Tuscaloosa News after the UConn game. So I would watch for that. And then, you know, Mo Wagee, I think, would be the other one. If they pick up a guy like Adu or Amore, I think that could push Mo Wagee out of the picture and back into the portal. So that's – and plus Aaron Estrada, he's gone. So that's – 8 to 9 losses out of a team of 12 players last year, which really just shows you how much this is a yearly fantasy football type build your roster each year project for Nate Oates. And he did a really good job of it last year. And I think he's certainly done a pretty good job of it this year too. If you look at the guys that, you know, he's brought in, and that's the number 6 transfer incoming class in the country. He adds that to the number 6 high school class in the country, and combined right now, they're number 3. in terms of overall incoming players. So that's how college basketball is operating. It's going to be a much different looking team next year. Again, you might have some familiarity if Sears comes back, assuming Wright still comes back. I think it'd be a surprise if he didn't. And then, you know, you're getting guys like Stevenson and Diabate back in the mix as well. But it's going to look different. And they still need that interior presence. You know, Adu didn't strike me as necessarily like a shot blocker type like Amore would be. But Adu, I think, could be a little bit more of a scorer down low, a rebounder. You know, I think he's pretty good at those things. I would have to go back to the Tennessee game and look exactly what he did against them. I'm sure Nate Oates was impressed with what he saw, and there's some really good schools. Baylor, I think, is looking at him. You know, Calipari at Arkansas, North Carolina is looking at him. So that's a pretty good list for Adu in terms of what he's drawing for interest right now. But Amore, I think, would be the better fit, better what they missed last year in terms of being a rim protector and a shot blocker.
We'll kind of monitor that and see what ultimately they can do to shore up. A reminder, obviously, I think this is probably well known by now, but Alabama lost five of their top six scorers from last year's team, replaced them with a ton of, you know, mid-major transfers, I suppose is the short way to say it, and ended up going further than the team that was the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament, right? Making their first ever appearance in the Final Four. So pretty, you know, Nate Oates and his staff know what they're doing. They know who they want to go get, how they fit in the system, and you know, they'll have another year to try and figure out what the system will look like. I did want to circle back to Aiden Holloway, who transferred from Auburn to Alabama. Very rarely see that in, you know, any sport, much less basketball. And then we, you know, don't always see the level of honesty, I guess, is maybe a way to phrase how Holloway, you know, explained his decision to transfer. Mike, you wrote that he was you know, considered really one of the best guards in the country. You know, I think he played a lot for Auburn early on, didn't maybe near the end. And then he had this money quote, our term, not his, to our own Brett Greenberg, our recruiting guy, about explaining why he decided to transfer, you know, one from Auburn, but then ultimately to Alabama. I'll read this quote in full. At Auburn, I kind of got sold on a dream by my coach. The season started out good for me individually and as a team, and then we kind of went in a different direction with the offense. I was just kind of taken out of the offense as a playmaker and like a decision maker. I was just on the court when it came to offense. It was just tough for me. End quote. Obviously, that's a shot at the Auburn program and maybe a little bit of a stray at Bruce Pearl, head coach there. Very successful coach throughout his career. He's taken Auburn to the Final Four. What do we make of that? Do we make anything of it? What do we think about that? Like, that's interesting, right? And it's probably going to add a little bit of spice to, you know, the Iron Bowl of basketball, right?
Yeah, I mean, either way, Alabama goes into Neville Arena next year, and yeah, it's
he's going to need security for that game, right?
Like, you don't need that. Like, it's going to be a rough environment either way, but that certainly adds to it. Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I mean, it's again, like great job by Brett. Like, I don't know, like, if I'm in Holloway, if I want to say that, like, I'm not gonna be mad about the story, you know, being on our website, but if I'm in Holloway, it's like probably not totally necessary. Like, I think you know, again, a lot of players I think just kind of brush it off, and wherever they were previously, they just kind of you know, just kind of let it go. Obviously, in Holloway still harbors some certain feelings about
this dude wanted to get something off his chest a little bit. I was kind of impressed
about that.
Check it a little bit. I mean, there is a little bit of like, okay, I know you feel that way, but also you weren't exactly shooting the ball particularly well. So, at what point does the offense stop flowing through you? Like, I get it. Every guy's going to feel this way, especially when you're a ball handler and you're a shooter. But if the ball's not going in the net, they got to go a different direction. And that's why I think the addition's really interesting to me is, look, it's got huge potential upside, but he's got to fix whatever was broken down the stretch in terms of his shot. Because if that's not going through, he doesn't have the size that says he's going to figure out a way to make a shot on his own. So if it's going to work in any offense, I think it's got the potential to work in Nate Oates. But can you feel that way about Auburn? Sure. I do think there's a little bit of like a factor fiction. I don't really know.
Right. Yeah. This is an Alabama podcast, but I'm sure there's justifications for Auburn fans feeling the way that they do. Like, I think that's fair to say, given again, his shooting numbers last year was not really a major part of the rotation by the end of the year. they also lost to Yale at the end of the year. So I don't know. You know, again, the biggest thing with him is that he was considered one of the best shooters in the country coming out of high school. He's one of the top recruits in the country. He's a top 15 or 20 prospect. So if you're not doing your best thing well, you got to do something else well. And he assist to turnover ratio was really good last year. He was not a turnover prone player, but he's also not necessarily known for his ball handling either. So again, I think Oates' system really likes the combo guards. There's not usually a true point guard. I mean, they did with Kyra Lewis as Oates' first year. And maybe that's like a decent comp for Aiden Holloway and potential role. You know, JD Davison's probably the player that kind of compares to him in terms of being a little bit smaller, did not shoot the ball well for Alabama 2 years ago, was a highly recruited kid coming in as a freshman. Probably not as explosive as Davison. Davison got drafted, you know, based on his athleticism. So, you know, I think it can work. Like if you have shooters around him, if you have Youngblood and Millett shooting and you maybe get Sears back, or at least you get Reitzel back, then you're going to have some guys around him who can shoot. And, you know, if Holloway's taking two shots a game from three, like, you know, if he makes one of them, great. If he makes zero, like, I think you can survive. It's for him, it's being able to score at the rim, I think, is going to be important, which he did not do very well last year. And then being able to avoid turnovers is going to be important, which he did do well last year. That's going to be, I think, his game. And if they can open him up for some looks and he starts getting hot and he's shooting three, four, five times a game from deep, then that would be the ideal scenario. But again, there's, I think both sides are right on this one. I don't think we have to brush off Auburn's feelings towards Aiden Holloway as being illegitimate, because I think there's legitimate concerns about his shooting. But at the same time, I think there's a good track record of Nate Oates developing these players through the portal and finding the right players through the portal. And that could very well be what happened here.
Yeah. Quick fact check, scored in double figures, 6 of the first 10 games for Auburn last year, but then only once from January 20th through the end of the season, somewhere in the ballpark of like 12 to 15 games. And in their in Auburn's first round loss to Yale in the NCAA tournament, Holloway played 13 minutes, shot 0 for 5, including 0 for 3 from deep, had just one rebound, one steal, a foul, and a turnover, no points scored. So I'm sure everybody is kind of correct in the way that they're feeling. I'm sure Holloway probably thought, I need to play more. And I'm sure Auburn thought, no, you don't. So it all makes sense. And if there's one thing, you know, just, you know, again, not the foremost basketball expert here. But if I did learn anything, it's that, you know, Oates is going to find a way to get the most out of his guys. And so adding Holloway to the mix, you know, I'm sure that there's a role in there too, you know, and especially if like a Mark Sears comes back, that gives you another guard on the floor that can bring the ball up. He doesn't turn the ball over. He can shoot some. Oates will find a way to put him in the best position to maybe maximize that. He shot, I think, what, 31% from the floor this past season, you know, 30% from deep total. So, you know, Oates will probably figure out a way to, you know, maybe try and help that climb to like 35% shooting from deep, something like that. And, you know, it's we'll kind of see what it all looks like. Right. I know that just the having a lot of guys who can do a lot of different things is going to help in a Nate Oates offense. And this is a guy that has shown that he can do a lot of things, how it factors into Alabama's team next year. We'll see. Right. So that's really all I had for today, guys. You got any other final thoughts on the portal, football, basketball, otherwise, before we sign off here this morning?
I mean, by all accounts, they're still going to host Sean Padula, the Virginia Tech guard, you know, through the portal on Thursday. So that could give you another option just to kind of hedge your bets a little bit in the backcourt. Because, yeah, right now he's crystal balled to Oklahoma. But if he does go to Alabama, that would give you another layer. If Holloway doesn't shoot very well, you don't have to play Holloway. You have another option. So, you know, that's another name to look out for. But I do think their two top targets right now are the big men, in Amore and Adu.
And I think that on the football side, the thing to watch over the next week, not necessarily the additions, but at what point do we start to see a little bit of attrition? I know there was the expectation that a few guys would leave, not in huge numbers, but if and when that happens, I think is probably something to watch out for, not just Tony Mitchell, but maybe a couple other guys. So I'll be very interested to see how that sort of plays out over the next 8 days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We will keep tabs on all of that at Bama 247. Stay locked in for all the latest updates, news, and analysis and what it all means by all three of us, as well as Brett, a recruiting expert. We'll be back sometime later this week to probably discuss a little bit of the NFL draft. I know that the schedule has kind of flown by us, but the draft is this week in Detroit, starts Thursday, runs Friday and Saturday. So we'll talk about some of the former Alabama players that are expected to get drafted. And then probably sometime next week to maybe recap the draft and look ahead to the final days of the portal, kind of what it all means and preview some of the summer stuff. So lots to still talk about, even though it's the off season. So before we come back, though, be sure to rate and review the show wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, even our Bama 247 YouTube page. Subscribe to Bama 247 and 247 Sports. We're probably still running a special because I feel like we're always running a special to get an annual VIP membership. Absolutely lock into that, especially if you're an Alabama fan, because clearly, as you can tell from this podcast, a lot to still discuss and talk about, even though it's the off season. So, Alex, Mike, appreciate you guys joining me as always. We appreciate you, dear listener, for listening. We will talk to you all again soon.
Wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the sun. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.